now going to discuss some inyanim relating to shechita. Okay, pasuk says. This sefer, see the sefer called Oitzer Pila Oisatayr. He put out this. There's a person by the name of a Gvir. He's a very wealthy person, I understand. His name is Zev Wolf Zicherman. He put out already 5 volumes, 1 volume for each Chumash. He used Oitzer Chochma for this. And he has other things. A lot of conversations he had with Rav Chaim Kinievsky, Zechet Tzadik Levracha. And he put together some very fascinating things. It's called Oitzer Pilois, a collection of wonders. Everything in the sefer always begins with a Pella. I saw this, a Pella, 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 Pella. Taka, some of them are Pellas. All right. Any event, let's discuss some interesting in Yanim regarding to the laws of Shechita. It says in this week's Parsha, Pasuk says, let me find the Pasuk. Here we go. Ki yirchak mimcho hamokoyim asher yivcha Hashem elokecha losum shemoi shom. We are discussing coming into Eretz Yisrael. Coming to Eretz Yisrael, if a person wants to eat meat, so how does a person eat meat? You bring a carbon. You bring a carbon shlamim. When you bring a carbon shlamim, then it's a voluntary sacrifice. Anytime you want, you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you can cover in Shlomim, Kodshei Kalim, you can eat the meat inside the walls of Yerushalayim, you give the Kohanim certain parts, and you and your family take the rest of the animal, and you have 2 days and the night in between to eat the entire animal. You go anywhere inside the walls of Yerushalayim. It's a very nice thing to do on a summer vacation. You go to Eretz Yisrael, get on a plane, and you mitire yourself, you go to mikvah, and you learn Musar, and you come to the Beis HaMikdash, and you say to the Kohanim, you know, we're hungry. We came here to Eretz Yisrael to have a good time, good vacation, so we want to have some Basar. So instead of ideally not. That's an interesting concept. Ideally, when a person already is eating meat, he should eat meat bitahara. He should eat meat. You should, basically, Hashem should be part of your dinner. How is Hashem part of your dinner? You bring the animal as a sacrifice to Hashem. We have no understanding of what this means. Sacrifice, obviously, was a very holy experience, an uplifting experience, and it was a perk. And the perk was, the owner of the animal takes home with him a good chunk, and I don't know, the entire animal, you have to give the Kohanim a certain part, the Chaz of a Sheik, but a major chunk of the animal is taken home by the owner of the animal, and he eats it, and not only does he eat it, anyone can eat it, basically. He can give it to anyone that he wants. They have to meet very, very limited conditions. They have to be Tahar, and it has to be inside the walls of Yerushalayim. So it's pretty clear from Chazal that if a person wants to eat basar, the proper way to eat basar would be through a religious experience of taking an animal, offering it as a sacrifice, a karbon shlamim, and enjoying the meat in Yerushalayim. Pasuk says it's not going to be all that practical for every single person living in Eretz Yisrael to do this whenever they want to have a dinner. It's not all that practical. You live in the whole Eretz Yisrael, it's gridlock. In Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash. It's not so easy. Ki yirchak mimcha, and certainly if you live in Chutz Li'aretz, and certainly during the Churban Beis HaMikdash, there are no korbanos. So how then will you be able to eat meat? This pasuk in Parashas Re'eh, Perek Yud Beis, pasuk of Aleph, is the only pasuk, basically, that comes to permit a person to eat what's called Bisar Chulin. This is the heter. In this week's parsha, the heter that you can eat meat even if the meat is not a korban, but you have to meet certain conditions. You can take out a shulchan aruch yeredeya, chelik aleph, a whole thick section on the laws of shechita, hilchos treifas, melicha, basa b'cholav, dam, taruvin, all the laws.
You don't have to be tar anyway.
You don't have to be tar. That's the part, and the entire Shulchan Aruch is rooted in two words. Kasher tzivi sicha. As I have commanded you. Remember the Rashi in Parashas Chayesara? Yofes sichoson shel avdi avos yoser mitoyrosan shel bonim. The Torah repeats in utter detail the story of Eliezer, who was an Eved Avram, how he came about to marry off, find Rivka as a shirch for Yitzchak, repeats the story in detail twice. Oh, Yofa Sichos and Avdi Avos Yoiser, Mi Toira Son, the Toira of the Bonim. Alma Ne'emar, on this, Kasher Tzivi Sicha. You can spend years, a lifetime, learning Mesech Tuchulin and learning all the details about Hilchos Shechita, Hilchos Treifas, and the laws and everything that goes around it, and every single halacha of Hilchos Shechita Treifas is all rooted in two words in the Torah: Kasher Tzivi Sicha, as I commanded you. V'zavachta, no, okay, that's part of the thing over here. It's part of the pasuk. Ki yirchak mimcha hamakayim, asher yivcha Hashem alekech losum shemay sham. And so what are you going to do? How am I going to be able to eat basar? So Hashem says, I give you permission. I give you permission to take the life of an animal. V'zovachta. You can slaughter. Mibikorecha. Umitzoynecha. From the bokor vitzoyn. Asher nosan Hashem lecha. Kasher sivisicha. According to the laws that I have commanded you. When did Hashem command us? Moshe Rabbeinu taught them all the laws of kosher meat. Everything that it involves. V'achalta, and you can eat this anywhere you want. V'achalta, b'sharecha, in your gates, b'chol avas nafshecha, with the full desire of your neshama. But then the pasuk goes on to say, ach, kasher yeochel es hatzvi v'yesu ayol, kein toich lenu. Eat it the way you eat tzvi v'ayol, which we'll discuss why the pasuk is coming to compare it to tzvi v'ayol. Don't drink the blood. Okay, let's discuss some interesting things about the laws about shechita. There's a very interesting person. His name was Eldad Hadoni. Did anyone ever hear of Eldad Hadoni? I didn't really hear of him. Eldad Hadoni, when did he live? He lived way, way back. He lived Bishnas Dalet Alafim Tof Resh Mem, which is more than 1,000 years ago. So we're holding over here Tof Resh Shin. So we're holding over here about 1,150 years ago. Approximately 1,100 years ago. So what year would that be in this? That would... The 800s. So that's the 9th century. In the 9th century, that was the time of the Ge'onim. That was before Rashi was born. Okay, about 200 years before Rashi was born. It was even before the time of Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon wasn't even born yet. Right. This was the tail end of the Rabbanan Savaroi and the Tekuf of the Ge'onim. Something like that. Right. And there was a person who appeared out of nowhere. And his name was Eldad Hadoni. And he came from Africa. Somewhere from Africa. He shows up and he says that he is from the Aseres HaShvatim. And he was a very brilliant person, very charismatic, and he knew quite a bit. And not everything that he said stimmed 100% with what Klal Yisrael, where did he come? Who did he come to? Who did he show up to? Where exactly did he enter? Eldad Hadoni, Sheshalu Anshe Ki Ro'on, Merav Tzemach Goin, during the time of the Goinim, Misura. Okay, so he came to Sura. He came to Sura. Sura, I guess, is in Bavel.
It was a famous community, Kairouan.
Oh, where is Kairouan? Where is that? What part of the world? What? Okay. Okay, so he came into where Klal Yisrael was established. He showed up from Africa. He appeared to be a very big Talmud Chacham. He knew quite a bit. And in fact, he told them his Yichus. It's unbelievable. He told them what his name is. My name is, you ready for this? My name is Eldad ben Machali ben Yecheskel ben Chizkia ben Aluk ben Avner ben Shmayohu ben Chatar. Had a Yichus brief. Okay, I'm going to go through every single person all the way down. Ben Shalom. I skipped the whole couple of lines. Ben Shalom, Ben Kolev, Ben Amram, Ben Dumam, Ben Ovadyahu, Ben Avraham, Ben Yosef, Ben Moshe, Ben Yaakov, Ben, I should go even further because all these are repeat names. All the way down, Ben Chushim, Ben Don, Ben Yaakov, Avinu, Olav Shalom. A whole long Yichus brief. He goes down, a whole Yichus, he brought with him a Yichus brief all the way back to Yaakov Avinu. He claimed that he was from Shevet Dan. Eldon, that's what he's called, Eldon Hadoni, from Shevet Dan, from the Aseres HaShvatim, who were exiled by Sancheirif, 150 years before the Churban, and all of a sudden shows up over here this person, and when he spoke, he would say, Omar, and he would tell over Halach, he would say, this is something that was very unusual, Omar Rabbeinu Yehoshua ben Nun, Mipi Moshe ben Amram, Mipi HaGevur. When he would say halachos, he would say, this is what Yehoshua ben Nun, Mipi Moshe, ben Amram, Mipi HaGevur. He was very intriguing, this person. He was tested. It says over here, Eldad Hadoni Nifchan al Yidei Rabbonim Goinim. He came and he appeared to the Goinim. This is the era of the Goinim. Shebe Oysa Hador. I'm reading over here what he says over here from Rabbi Zichron. He's citing over everything over here is sourced. V'roiv Chachnei Yisrael Motsu'uhu Ne'emon Bidvarov. Whatever he said was Ne'emon. The Samchu Allah B'divrei Halacha. They even trusted him. He said Chidushim they never heard before. And that is why you will find in some sefarim, halacha sefarim, the old halacha sefarim, a halacha that is said over in the name of Eldad Hadoni. And the question is, where did Eldad Hadoni get this from when we don't have this in our Mesorah? And it's something which the Mefarshim struggle with. Why am I telling you all this? Because part of the intriguing things that he revealed, this very interesting person who appeared out of nowhere from Africa and claimed that he's part of the 10 lost tribes, going back 1,150 years ago, he told them 10 halachos b'nogeya hilchos shechita. 10 halachos that no one ever heard of before, that he was very makbid on, and he claims that the people that he came from were very makbid on. And the question is, do these halachas, do they enter into Shulchan Aruch? And some do and some do not, even though there's no makor. What are the 10 halachas? I'll just rattle them off. Number one is that, I don't know what the first one means. V'lo yishchait at sheyifne el hakodesh l'mokoyim tefila. I don't know what those words mean. I don't know what that means. Sheyifne el hakodesh l'mokoyim tefila? I don't know. Let's go to the next one. Number two. If you shecht without making a bracha, it's treif. Piggle, called a piggle, which basically means it's not kosher. If a shechit forgets to recite a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokim Melech Olam, Asher Kedoshanu B'mitzvah V'tzvanu Al Hashchita, treif. You're not allowed to eat this meat.
Do we hold like that?
No, we don't. We don't hold like that. V'yim yishchit, if a shechit shechts without wearing clothing, naked. V'im yishchait arum pigol, v'im shikur, and this is in Shulchan Aruch, if he's drunk, if the shaykhid is intoxicated, that makes sense, pigol, because you did hagrama, you didn't do a kosher shchita. V'im shachad v'loy hayam, now listen to this, yishach without a head covering. If the act of shchita is done without wearing a head covering, treif. The im loichurchatz, if he does not go to mikvah, if a koyein was moitzi shechva zera and did not go to mikvah, treif. An ovel is also treif. Shchita, if a person is a soris, a person is not able to have children, he's not allowed to be a shechit. And listen, this is very amazing what it says over here. A shochet over the age of 80 is not allowed a shacht. This is what Eldad Hamadi reported 1,150 years ago in the name of his community.
Hadani,
if you're over 80 years old, no good. And a child, someone until he's 18 years old, is also no good. So this, now, there are a lot of svarim on Hilchoy Shechita, because Shechita, you know, we take it for granted today, because we live in an industrial society where no one even knows what an animal looks like. Most people can't tell the difference between a cow and a rabbit. We don't know the difference between anything today. Because we live, but not so long ago, the job of a rabbi was like a butcher, basically. The rabbi's house was a butcher shop. Every woman came to bring the rabbi the chickens. Is it kosher, not kosher? Okay, until not so long ago, that's the way we lived in a different world. Okay, we did live in a different world. So shechita was a very big thing. Shechita was nice in Mecholim, everyone. You did shechita, you have birds, you take the birds to the backyard, you do shechita, yeah?
I thought about an incident I think I once mentioned there. There was a ovos that had a lot of hair. So he was shechting today, and ovos, and he didn't realize his yarmulke fell off.
You don't bring a yarmulke?
Yeah. He felt so bad about it, and he said it must be a sin in Hashemayim, and eventually he stopped. He gave up shemitah.
Wow, because of that.
And he went to business, and he was very much in business.
So that's an amazing thing, because Eldad Hadani, it's interesting, is everything that he said over here, for some reason, and occasionally he said this, so all the people say, you know, we have a Messiah, and someone wants to come along and claim he's from the Aseres HaShvatim. Okay, good. It's not the Messiah. You're telling us new things that we never heard of before. We don't accept it. For some reason, the Goinim got very nervous from this person. That's very clear. There's a lot of write-up on this. They got very nervous from him. And they took everything he said, they tested him. Aseres HaShvatim, he seemed to know an enormous amount. And he seemed to be very authentic. And he was. There's no one ever questioned that. That was the end. No one ever questioned him. And they were mefalpel in everything that he said, especially when it comes to Shechita. At the end of the day, they said, they basically accepted everything that he said, L'chumra, but not L'ikuvah. If a shochet doesn't make it, forgets to make a bracha, okay, there's no different than any other mitzvah. If you put on tefillin and you forget to make a bracha, you yoytze the mitzvah of tefillin. If you don't make a bracha when you do shechita, it's a kosher shechita. But it bothered them. The goyim bothered them. Maybe taka, it should be ma'akev. It should be ma'akev. Why? It obviously has to do with something which he touches upon, everyone touches upon, is that time we started the shir. And that is, when you do an act of shechita, it is the closest thing you're doing to bringing a korban bisman hazeh. The whole din of shechita, v'zovachta ka'asher tzivi, v'b'chorcha v'tzoncha, asher noslucha Hashem lokecha ka'asher tzivi sicha, opens up a concept. When it says the word v'zovachta, the word v'zovachta is the same word that is used when it comes to bringing a korban. And there's an emphasis, kasher tzivi sicha. And the whole heter, to eat besar chulin, is only as a realization that you're not doing the ideal thing. Really, when you eat meat, the only way to eat meat is to bring a korban. No, it's not practical. Okay, so I'm going to permit you to eat besar chulin. But the terminology that is used in the pasuk is the same terminology that is used when it comes to bring a korban. Kasher, as I commanded you. When you're shechting an animal, it's not for nothing that in the world today, shechita is a very big deal. It's a very big deal. Why is a taka a very big deal? It's because slaughtering an animal is not taking a fish out of water. You go to the fish store, you see outside in the street, the fish are still alive, and they're flapping around. They're flapping around. No, you got to calm down the fish, wait for it to die, and you eat the fish. No one cares. It's not a religious service going fishing, getting a fish in the fish store. But when it comes to take the life of an animal, it's very clear, it's not a carbon, chas v'shalom, it's not a carbon, make no mistake, but there is a yiras haroimimus that slaughtering an animal borders upon an avoida of bringing a carbon. V'zavachta, kasher tzivi, as I commanded you, and you're only eating this basa, really you shouldn't be eating this. Really, you should be eating a carbon in Eretz Yisrael, and you should be tahar. You should be tahar, and you should be eating within the chumas of Yerushalayim. And Hashem said, "No, I'm going to let you eat." But Mimela, because it's coming off of what the ideal thing is, it's not for nothing. If you don't make a bracha, where is the kasher tzivisicha? Where is the acknowledgement? The Yiras HaRoimimus, the Yiras Shamayim, that what you're doing now has to be Kasher Tzivi Sicha. Where is it? You didn't make a bracha? Forget it. It's treif. It's not treif because you didn't do a good shchiti. You did hagrama, hadrasa, shehiya. That's not why it's treif. It's not, you're not paying attention. When it comes to an act of shchita, there's a flavor in the Torah. This is a carbon. Everything that Eldad Hadani says captures a religious expression of the Yiras Shamayim that has to be injected into the slaughter of a piece of meat. You have to wear a head covering. There has to be Yiras Shamayim. You must make a bracha. You must go to mikvah. You must be bintar. A person who's an ovel, you're not fit. You're not in the frame of mind to bring karbonos. And what else did we say? These are the basic things, and therefore everything that he said all of a sudden became among the gomer teshuvas. Taka, how far does it go? How far does it go, Taka? If you're not wearing your head covering, is it Taka treif? Maybe it is treif. If Halacha l'maaseh, none of these things are ma'akev, but they are given consideration. At least the lechatchila, you see, to the very makbid the mikvah. Today, there's almost no such thing today as a shaychet. In the industry today, there's no such thing as a shaychet doing shchit without going to mikvah. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I went to the slaughterhouse, and it's like a shaychet has to go. Why? Why does it go to mikvah? A sefer me'ikar hadin doesn't need to go to mikvah. When you write a sefer Torah, when you write Hashem's name, it's ma'akev. If you don't go to mikvah before you write Hashem's name, that then the sefer Torah, I think, is possible. I feel a bit d'yavid. But to write a sefer Torah besides Hashem's name, so you don't know where else to go to mikvah. When you do any other mitzvah, that you do, a moil has to go to mikvah. Doesn't have to go to mikvah. I'm not even sure you'll go to mikvah. A moil has to go to mikvah. A sadnik has to go to mikvah? No. It's a nice thing to go to mikvah. You have to go to mikvah. Today in Shechita, you couldn't sell meat today unless the shaykhtim all go to mikvah. There is a heavy weight of consideration that goes into the act of Shechita, where Shechita is the closest thing that you have today to be bringing a korban. It's an acknowledgement. Taking the life of an animal and eating the basal l'shem shemayim is an offshoot of shchitas korbanos, and there are serious things. Now, there's one thing in the list though that is not like that. I think from all of the 10 things that Eldad Hadani said, and this one has attracted an enormous amount of attention, and actually you can talk about this in the world of chinuch as well. Okay, the world of chinuch, I know a certain yeshiva. They have a rule: when you're 75 years old, you're out. 75 years old, you're fired. You cannot be a Rebbe in the yeshiva, and that's a hard rule. So a lot of Rebbeim are very good, and you would think, how old is this Rebbe? I would say he's in his 60s. 75 years old? Who would have imagined? He looks young. he's vibrant, he's strong. He was laid off. Age discrimination. What? Maybe. Maybe he can. Maybe he can. Imamish. I know. Oh, this guy. He got it. I know. What? You just said it. So Rabbi Belsky got the same exact job in a Svarisha yeshiva. In 1 second. 75 years old. You're not allowed to work here anymore. That's the hard rule. No exceptions. So there was a Svardisha yeshiva. We needed someone. Oh, we don't have this rule. Hired in a second to do exactly the same exact job. Mamish, seamless. He got lucky. Okay? He got lucky. Most people aren't so lucky. If they're healthy and they want to work and they're good, whatever it is. He says here, a Shaykhid over the age of 80, Eldad Hadani, out. Fired. Over the age of 80. So this is something that it seems, from all of the things that Eldad Hadani said, this is the only one that seems was not accepted. And what's the reason? I'm assuming because the person over the 80, he's already losing it a shtickle. So you do... Most people in their 20s, they already lost it already. So the hands are shaking, or they can't. You know, shchita, you have to have very good senses. You have to sense. It's a matter of sense. It has to be smooth. No shehiya, hagrama, not let it delay, not let it put too much pressure. There's a certain sense that the shchita is being done naturally, without force and without delay. Now, by the way, there's another very important difference, that when they did shchita back in those days, 1,100 years ago, they did shchita with an iron knife. Today, there's no such thing as doing shchita with a knife of iron. All the knives today are steel. Steel didn't even exist 1,000 years ago. When it first came into existence, it was only available for governments who had the technology and the resources to produce steel. It only became available for the masses like 500 years ago, approximately. It was available, it was invented, it was created, whatever. I don't know how all these things work, about 1,000 years ago, maybe less. But the Hamoin Am did not have available steel until much more recently, about 500 years ago. If you learn Masechta Chulin, and you learn Shchita, and it talks about checking the blade of the knife on three sides, on this side, on that. There are many halachas in Shchita which make absolutely zero sense. If you don't know that when the Gemara talks about Shchita, the Gemara is talking about doing Shchita with an iron knife. The Gemara talks about delay. Why would you delay? Today when you do Shchita, how long does it take to do Shchita on a bird? A half a stroke. A bird is done, they have a chalaf, I think a half of a stroke, the bird's already gone. What, you're gonna delay for half an hour? An animal, how long does it take to do a shchit on the biggest animal in the market? 1.5 strokes. One and back, already by going back a half a time, you're already done. One and back, finished. Shehiya. The Gemara makes it sound like you're going back and forth for 20 minutes. What are you talking about? And because you're going back and forth for 20 minutes, I'm tired. Let's get this over with. Push down hard. I'm tired of this. Going back and forth to cut the neck of the animal with the sharpness of the blade. It's hard. The knife is very heavy. I got to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It cuts very, very slowly. So I have to go. You know, let's just get this over. I'll push down a little hard. No one's watching, and the animal's dead. Today, that doesn't exist. Who's going to do that today? Today, you only have to have a very big chalaf on a gasa. Go once, and back a little bit, and you're done. So where does shehiya come into the picture? The answer is, because in time of Chazal, they did shechita with a knife that was made from iron. Iron, you can't sharpen. It just doesn't go. It can't be laser thin. Today, we use steel. Steel is so sharp. It's so thin, it's so fine, you can do shechita in a second. So everything that it says in the Gemara about shechita is totally not relevant today. Because we're using a completely different type of knife than what they use in the time of the Gemara, which has its advantages, and there are also disadvantages. The disadvantage is that the knife today can be nicked very easily. A steel knife cannot be, an iron knife can never be nicked. You never have a problem with a pegima and a knife made from iron. Only a knife from steel. So it's a whole different experience, shechita. And by the way, who is the innovator? All of the litvaks have one person to credit. Who is the innovator of switching from iron to today? If they would invent steel today, no one would accept it. Chodosh Osur Min HaTorah. Who was the one that switched? And a lot of heat, the Baal Shem Tov. They thought he was modern. They thought he was mamish. He was who knows what. He went on a campaign to convince the Welt to stop using the old-fashioned iron knife and to embrace the new world, the modern technology. Your shechita takes a half a second. It's razor sharp, and you can do the shechita in an instant. The major problem with doing an iron knife, it takes a very long time to do shechita. It's not so sharp, and you have to go back and forth numerous times, and in the process, you're gonna press down on the animal. You're gonna do what's called hagrama, or you're gonna get tired, and you're gonna delay. You're not gonna do the shechita in one shot. So he was the one that went on a campaign to convince Klal Yisrael that they should stop using iron knives and they should use steel knives. What? Bris Milah, probably Bris Milah also. You're right. Yes. How did they do Bris Milah before steel? I don't know. I don't know. No, there was a Messiah. They used metal. Maybe that's why they never wanted to use metal to begin with. They used other things, but you're right. There was a deal that was made that you could use. So how did Taka use an iron metal? How did they use iron? I don't know. It's not so simple. Okay, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's no than shahia. There's no decay. I don't know. The nature of bris milah is a very different procedure, so it could be that's different. I don't know anything about this. And the Baal Shem Tov went up against a lot of pressure. Today will be mamash shtiyah. Today the Hasidim will be the ones that wouldn't want to be mishane. And the litvaks, the more modern, they would want to make changes in ritual procedures. Here it was the other way around. It was the Baal Shem Tov felt that it is critical that Klal Yisrael stop using iron and they should use steel. And he had a lot of opposition, and it took generations, a generation at least, until Klal Yisrael was mekabel to use steel and not iron. And today, no one even heard of this. Today, you tell the average guy learning Masechta Chulin, and you start asking him questions, where the Gemara says you check the knife. There are three parts to check. There's the tip of the blade, and then there's the slope on the left and the right side. What are you talking about? The left side and the right side? I'll give you a chalaf. There's nothing to check. There's only a blade. There's only the tip. There's no sides. What do you? I don't know. And there are many other shahia. Who's going to sit with a knife and go back and forth and do hagrama when you have a razor? Because hadrasa. Hagrama is the wrong part of the neck. Wrong right. That's also part. The halachas today, if you don't know this yisod, you can't even begin to learn Masechta Chulin. You're dealing with a very different type of knife. A knife that was made from iron. Not a knife that's made from steel. Today we only use steel. And the one that gets the credit for that is the Baal Shem Tov. Okay, so this is another thing. If you tell me the person is 80 years old and he's using an iron knife, which certainly he was, then I think there's something to it. A person who's 80 years old, he's weak. He's weak. And also, you know, his frame of mind. Eldad Hadani said, it is our Masaira, you have to retire. Fired. You lose your job at the age of 80. Can no longer be a shochet. All the Paiskim said that Bizman Hazeh, no such thing. They have testimony of the biggest Gedolei Yisrael, which was 85 years old, and this one was this, they were shochetim, they shechted past the age of 80, and it's obvious that part of the calculation has to be because today they're not using iron. They're using steel. Iron is heavy and takes a lot of work to do a shechita. Someone 80 years old, it's already a different stage in life. Steel is very light and it's very, very sharp. And we have Edus Brura Ne'mona that Gedolei Yisrael allowed Shechtim to continue to shecht
handshakes.
But even besides the shaking, there are the other issues. Besides, we have Edus Brura that Shechtim today are allowed to continue shechting as long as they're healthy and their hands are not shaking past the age of 80. Okay, let's discuss some other things. Let's discuss, is a Shechet allowed to be a Moihel? So today the answer is absolutely yes. Is a Shechet allowed to be a Rebbe for children? A Rebbe? Yes. Is a Shechet allowed to be a Shliach Tzibur? Yes. Today, Hayoim Tavshin Pei Gimel, absolutely. But back in the day, there were many Kehilos outlawed. It was also for a Shechet to be a Moihel. A Shechet is not allowed to be a Shliach Tzibur, and a Shechet is not allowed to be a Malamed Tinoiko Shel Beis Rabba. Why not?
What's the
rationale? What's the rationale? Why back? So there is Halacha and there is Kabbalah. So Halacha is that the knives, and this is what he says over here, it says the fact that they would use, occasionally it seems, back in the day, the same instrument that was used for Shechita, would you believe this, was used for Bris Milah. So a person who was a Shechet, he had one set of tools. He had the knife he used for Shechita, and that very same knife he would use for Bris Milah. Exactly. It's a sakana. It's a tremendous sakana. A person is in a routine, Rachman al-Litzlan. Okay? It's a Rachman al-Litzlan. No way. A Shechet under no kiddush, Chamira, Sakanta, Yoiser, Meisura. Can you imagine he's using the same instrument? Chas v'sham to let this guy anywhere near a child. He's an Erlich person. Erlich Yid. But he's in a certain profession, a certain frame of mind. Now, even if he doesn't have the same set of tools, I can't imagine today, no such thing today. Today, Moyalim have a very, very select set of instruments, highly customized instruments that are used, surgical instruments that are customized for Bris Milah, and a Shechet has a very different set. So today, no way in the world will a Shechet today be any overlap. But still, you could understand. I'm not going to elaborate, but I think you could all understand. This is Alpi Halacha. Alpi Halacha. Sakana. Chamira Sakante. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer why they should be outlawed. Under no condition would you let a Shechet anywhere near a child. Pashat. Now, Alpi Kabbalah. Alpi Kabbalah. What does a Shechet do? A Shechet brings death. It's more of a religious concept. You know, there are a lot of things people do when it comes to Bris Milah. You know, segulois. You do certain things for Siyata D'Shemaya. It's a holy moment. The child gets a Bris Milah. It's a moment of Kedusha. You bring a child tachas kanfei Hashchina. Lachnisa b'vrisosh Avraham Avinu. Everything has to be right. Who's the Sandik? You have a chosh of a person, a Talmud Chacham is going to be the Sandik, or the grandfather is going to be the Sandik. You have a moil. L'chat chila, you don't want to go take a moil, just stam a moil. You take a Yarish Shemayim. You know, it depends what you can get. But there are certain things you want to go do because it's a holy moment. Shechita is an act of death. It brings the animal's life to an end. What? It is holy. Shechit is a very holy thing. We just said. We just go recite the psukim that it's an like kamat, like a meiser, it's like the Beis HaMikdash. You bring a carbon, kamat. But even though you bring a carbon, but it is an act of death. Bris Milah is a meiser of life. V'oymar loch bidomayich chayi. V'oymar loch bidomayich chayi. It is an act of cutting, which produces blood, and through that you bring life. You bring a child, tachas kan v'yashchin. It says that's the nusach tefila. V'oy malach b'damayi chayi, v'oy malach b'damayi chayi. Al pi kabbalah. If you want a tzaddik who's a tzaddik, there are inyanim which we have no understanding of, but we appreciate and we have emuna. This is a moment of life. And a moment of life, it's not a pleasant thing to bring in the angel of death. Not that there's anything wrong with a shoychet, but a shoychet's profession, he specializes in the kedusha of death, the kedusha of death. Very good, we'll give him shishi, we'll give him all the chmos choshev kibudim, but this is a different type of service. This is a service of where we are sanctifying life. And he's just not the right person for the job. He's a wonderful person, he may be the Gadol Hadar, but if his expertise is in shechita, that's not what we want over here, al pi kabbalah, to be the person who is going to be mashpia upon the child, sanctity in life. Likewise, a Rebbe, it's v'limadetem o'sam es b'neichem, the role of a Rebbe is the koich adibur, the Torah shebal peh. Torah shebal peh. What does a shoychei do? He takes the life of an animal where? In the goroin, in the throat, in the makom of dibur. The location of shechita is primarily right up against the location of where the vesher and the kone of sound, the koyach of dibur that comes out of the neck of the animal where it produces sound. A shechit silences the koyach of dibur. So for him to be the shaliach tzibur, for him to be the one that is a malame, the Torah shebal peh, no. This is not the right person. He's a good person, but every person has to have their unique role, and this person is not the right role. Again, as I told you, this is not accepted today. Today, we write here, all the poets can say that this halacha is bottled, pretty much, and that all of the kehilos, we live in a generation today where there's no such thing. A shoychet can be a rebbe, a shoychet can be a shliach tzibur, a shoychet can be a moyel. And in fact, there are many shtelos, there are many jobs in all over the world where they hired a clay kodesh, and the job was to be the moyel and to be the shoychet. Right. There are many, for generations, people, communities, they were certain they needed a person, and the resume, the requirements are, we need you to be the shoychet, to be the moyel, to be the baal kriya, to be the malami, to be the beis rabban. And it is a given for generations that the shoychet also must be the moyel. It's a skill. Obviously, there's similarities in the skill, and though everyone, no one's afraid, everything is fine. We're just talking over here for learning purposes, is that generations ago, we're citing these very interesting concepts as number one, that it used to be such a thing in some kehilos where they wouldn't let a shaykhid anywhere near a child because of sakana. And number two, there's a Kabbalistic principle to this. When you live with holiness, you go to Bris Milah, Shechita is a Kiddush, is a Karban. A Karban demands a certain type of Avodah. When it comes to Bris Milah, B'damayi Chayi, Yibing Mekadesh, life. It's a different Avodah. And the roles don't necessarily overlap. Okay, now others, by the way, bring a very nice, Rabbi Marieski will appreciate this one. Some say, Pumfakert, that Adarabah, a Shoychet can for sure be a Shliach Tzibur. What's the raya? What is the trop for the word vayishchot? When you say the word vayishchot shalsheles, you have to sing a lot. You have to gragger to indicate that the shoychet can be the one that's the menagein. He's the melodious, the noyim zemirois Yisrael. So this is what it says, the remes. A remes that a shoychet can be the chazan because vayishchot is benigun shalsheles. To show, you have to gargle, you have to go.
But it's a serrated sign.
You can't have a serrated knife. Okay, that is another drasha.
Can an undertaker become a chazan for the...
A what?
An undertaker.
Rabbi Kefet always says that Rabbanim... Rabbanim, when they retire, they become undertakers. Why? After a career of where all the balabatim talk back to them, they need a profession where the client doesn't talk back to them.
Rabbi. Well,
no, I'm saying the chazan, because an undertaker, you know,
is death.
Like a person said, she stopped opening there because the undertaker is asking for chanosa.
Ooh, very funny. The undertaker wants to be the chazan. The undertaker wants to be the chazan. It's David, because the undertaker, what is he being mispelled for? Parnassah.
Chaim
Shal Parnassah.
They said it was a story once years ago. They realized that the guy was mentioning Shkoyvich. He was like, oh, yeah, it's the undertaker.
Chaim Shal Parnassah. The Chavoid. We're here to give the mace the Chavoid Acharon. Chavoid. Chaim Shal Chavoid.
Wrote in his book that he used to answer his balabatas and gave him a hard time. He said, remember, I'm the one giving your
head. Yes, head. But...
Yeah.
Okay.
Rabbi, today to get smicha, do you have to know shkita?
It depends. I mean, when I got smicha not long ago in Tar V'Das, yes, tradition, shechita, treifais, melicha, taruvais, bas b'cholof. But today I hear, I don't know, today I hear there are a lot of programs that they focus on, let's focus on Or Chaim, let's focus on Hilchos Avelos. Today Rabbinics is trying a lot of programs.
Why you, they ask you what track you want to be on. What is your desire to be a Rav in Shul or a Rebbe in Yeshiva? And they split off at a certain point in time in the program, they give you different... By someone, you got smicha YU and it's later than you, they did shechita in the yeshiva.
They still did shechita.
Chayim brought a lamb into the base medrash there and all the screaming.
You need to know the Binuk. Rabbanim are very much involved in kashrus. That's how it is. Rabbanim are involved in kashrus. You have to know what goes on. You have to know. You have to know shechita. I mean, who's gonna, if not the Rabbanim, who's going to know these things? There's certainly an element of you know basic things you have to know. What's so terrible learning Shechita? The truth is, becoming a Rav, it's not about what you think you learn Shechita, you know everything. When you finish Shechita, you know nothing. You only learn from experience. But you have to be trained. There has to be an intensive training where you open up your mind to appreciate the complexity and the depth and the sanctity of Torah. And that, many will tell you, only comes when you learn in depth the sugyas of chulin, of shechita, tahara. You're not learning these sugyas because you're going to need to know them on a practical level. It is a training of the mind to appreciate the complexity, the inyanim and the lundis of the scope of how deep Torah is. That to be a certain type of person. And then when you go into rabbinics, no one ever is going to ask you a shayla. No one will ever bring you to their shayla on a chicken. Never, it's not going to happen. But what will they bring you a shayla on? Hilchos Shabbos. Can I use this crackpot? Can I not use this crackpot? You have to know Hilchos Taruvis. Oh, I use a fleshtik, a spoon, fell into this pot and that pot. Hilchos Avelis. You have no time to learn the halachas. People question Shasal Avelis. You got to on the spot. Someone, a balabas, the relative dies. I got to know exactly what to do. Right. This. There are many. Hilchos Erevin is a very big thing people have to know today. I live outside of Brooklyn. There's not a community in the world that doesn't have an Erev. So you got to know this stuff in cold. You got to know Hilchos Erevin cold. Hilchos Erevin was never part of a smicha program. What else? There are a lot. And then there are all these practical things. You have to know Hilchos.
If you just faxed me today, that Rabbi, he got regards from Rabbi Jack. He gave me regards from Rabbi Jack because he was in Kansas checking the air. He does about 98 Reuven. He goes around the United States checking.
Wow. He said sets them up.
Yeah.
And trains people. He sets them up and he trains people how to make sure.
Them during every year he has to make the rounds.
Wow. But he has also trained people to check them every Shabbos. It's very complicated. Hilchos Erevin is very, very complicated.
Go around with him on Friday.
And the problems are much greater than the heterim are really, really stretched in. The leniencies that go into making Eruvim in Lakewood. In Lakewood, it's very complicated. Very, very complicated. And also, there's never money. It's very expensive. To fund an Eruv properly costs a fortune. Who's going to give money?
My garage was full of letters.
Who's going to give money to pay a professional to go check the area every week, and then it's inevitable you're going to find a problem, and they have to on the spot do construction to get the area back in business. Cost a fortune. Cost a fortune. Who's willing to pay this kind of big money? There's no big.
Florida, they use Rabbi Spitz from Miami. He's very.
But it's not. You need. He sets it up. The Rabbanim they go around one time and they set it up. And they look at all the issues, all the problems, they work out the problems, but there has to be someone that is constantly on top of it. Every Friday they have to check the area. Every Friday you got to go.
The telephone company has a lot of problems with the wires.
They cut down wires all the time, and who says the wire?
Changing the wire.
Of course. And the lechi is no good here, no good there, and then the droops.
Wire
this wire is no good. There are always, always major, major issues. Almost every week. And you have to have a crew, a professional crew, who need the licensing, get into trouble with the city, the state. You have to have the tools, and you have to have the equipment. You have to have cherry pickers to do all these things. This is not a kleina thing, Hilchos Erevin. My brother was telling me what goes on.
Rav Tuvia, his halakha program, smicha program, which I got from him, by the way, but he has. Osipopolov, Taruvos, Hilchos Erevin. And by the way, these things you have to learn the Gemara, and then the Tor, and then the Shulchan Aruch. And then the real deal. And then, the latest operation.
Practical halacha. The article footnotes.
Avelis he would learn also, and Shabbos. I remember Avelis also was on the.
And also Hilchos Nida. Hilchos Nida. A Rav can't be a Rav unless he knows Hilchos Nida. Hilchos Nida.
They're a special,
Today we live in a world where everything's a specialty. Right. Oh, you want kashrus, you go to him. Erevin, you go to him. Nida, you go to him. Okay, today everything became a specialty, which is good and bad. I'm really out of time. I just want to say one last thing, very, very quick thing of the Divrei HaGadol, which he's telling me, which he writes over that he told Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he praised it very much. It's a very beautiful thing. When did meat become permitted? Question, is man really meant to eat meat? When Hashem created a human being, is it a good thing to eat meat or not? So there's a big pilpul about this. The Pasha says not, because man does not have the teeth. A human being, Dr. Dovi, you hear? A man, Dr. Beanstalk, does man really have the teeth to eat meat?
Mm-hmm.
Do we really have the teeth? Animals that eat meat are much more.
We don't eat raw meat.
Even cooked meat. Does a human being really have teeth? Teeth that were designed to chew meat? Many will argue no. No.
Why not? The backbone is doing a good job.
They do good enough. Couldn't they be better? Like there are certain animals that have them, they're more ideal. So some will argue that eating meat is only a bidyavid which came into the world after the mabul. Until the mabul, no, man was not allowed to eat meat. It was only after the mabul you could eat meat. And now here's the tremendous, it's a very beautiful, very, very, very quick, very, very beautiful chiddush. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, Hashem gave a warning to animals. Animals, I'm giving you a warning, do not eat people. Okay, it's a pasuk. There's a pasuk, it's a remez. That Hashem gave a bracha that animals should be afraid of human beings. Why did Hashem only give that bracha after the mabul? Why didn't Hashem give that bracha that animals, why? So it says in the Medrash, Davar Nifla, that until man was given permission to eat meat, so I mind my business, you mind your business. Adam was not allowed to eat meat until the mabul. So animals never felt threatened. Animals were never threatened. An animal sees a human being. I'm not going to bother you because you're not going to bother me. When an animal sees a human being, an animal says, oh, there's a human being, have a nice day. You do your thing, I'll do my thing. After the mabul, Hashem said to man, you can eat up animals. Eat them up. So when an animal, after the mabul, the animal sees a human being, uh-oh, that guy walking around with 2 feet, he wants me for supper. He's a roidev. Habol lahargicha, hashkeb lahargoy. So the animals became violent because the animals felt threatened. And guess what? The animals are much more vicious than man. And man doesn't stand a chance. So Hashem went and Hashem said, animals, even though I'm letting them eat you up for dinner, don't start up with them. Don't fight with them. Run away. Don't fight with them.
Is there an explanation why Hashem allowed
it? There is, but not another time. Not for now. There is an explanation. So now, after the Mabul, there became a new world, where Hashem allowed man to eat animal. Oh, the animal now feels threatened, and the animal wants to eat up man first. Hashem said, don't do this. So this, Rabbi Zichron, in his own chiddush, he says, this is the pshat in Doniel beguv ha'arayos. He told Rav Chaim Kanievsky, they threw Doniel into a lion's den. How many lions were there? I have a safe over here, a whole safe on this. There are like hundreds of, he has exact number of lions, of Midrashim. And the lions didn't eat up Doniel. They didn't touch him. They didn't touch him. In fact, they took care of him. They made a ganz zach, all these Midrashim. What's going on over here? Try this. Don't you want to try this in a zoo? To be thrown into a lion's den, they'll devour a person in a second. So he told Rav Chaim Kanievsky, you know why the lions did not eat up Daniel? Because Daniel, when he was brought to the palace, there was no kosher meat. So Daniel said, I'm going to be a vegetarian. I'm going to eat seeds. Purim, you eat seeds. He mastered the art. I will not eat meat because there's no kosher meat. I will not eat meat. Memela, he went back to a darga of Adam before the Mabul. Because of the situation where there was no kosher meat, he was moiser nefesh to eat just seeds. So he became a person who was like Adam, man, before the Mabul. Memela, the animals don't feel threatened. Memela, Daniel is a holy person. The lions saw Daniel, besides the miracle, but the lions, they saw Daniel. Daniel, you remind us of man before the Mabul. Man before the Mabul wasn't a threat to us. They had no intent to eat basar. So you don't bother us, we don't bother you. Memela, we're your best friend over here. Chazal go out of their way very much to talk about the godless of Daniel that he ate seeds. He did not eat meat. That's why I have Haman Tashin. Tashin is supposed to be seeds, right? Esther Hamalka follow in the way of Daniel, Ish Hamudos, seeds. Oh, look at this. A man who doesn't want to eat me for dinner. If you don't want to eat me for dinner, I don't want to eat you for dinner. We're good friends. He said this, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he said he praised this word very much. It's a very beautiful idea to be masbir, the whole Indian of Daniel being thrown to Guv Aroyos.